sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
We position it slightly different. We're always trying to simplify it for everybody out there too. And we just say, our job is to help solve a problem for a client or help solve a problem for a prospect. And now, sometimes they may come to us knowing exactly what that problem is. And sometimes they may come to us looking for some guidance, you know, looking in terms of what the art of the possible is. You know, you've sold some very large things to some very large companies, done big deals. In your old world, you would have approached some very large prospects with a point of view on the art of possible that they may not have anticipated before. You can call it value engineering, you know, big software companies call it different things, but they may not have known. You know, you might have done some research on their business and understand there were some metrics they weren't performing against, and you might be able to help them.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Mark Cox. Mark's the founder of In the Funnel, a sales consulting firm. And in this conversation from the archives of the Sales Enablement Podcast, Mark and I talk about why sellers need a repeatable process to convert prospects into paying clients. Because as Mark says, in the absence of selling as a process, sales pursuits become just a series of unrelated events. Mark shares his three critical concepts that sales is built on, and he talks about why professional salespeople need to think about their buyer's view of what is going on and how they can help their buyers through their process versus driving them through your sales process. All of this and much, much more. But before we get to Mark, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, wherever you listen to podcasts. I also want to remind you to check out my latest book, Sell Without Selling Out. It's a modern, human-centric framework for increasing your win rates and shortening decision cycles without using the salesy behaviors that buyers so dislike. It's available everywhere you shop for books, online, and in stores. All right, let's jump into it. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy, it's great to be here. I'm a huge fan of the show, so thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. We just talked, didn't we? Like a couple days ago. So if people want to go back and go to your website and watch the webinar we did, they should go do that.
They should. And by the way, one of the things we both said in the middle of that kind of 45-minute live webinar was, we could talk for hours about this stuff. So I'm glad we're getting another chance now.
So here we are, right.
Yeah.
Now the question is, does anybody want to listen to us talk for hours about it? I don't know. We would have fun. But hopefully this is good entertainment and education for people that are listening.
Absolutely. I hope so too. And again, for those listening, I got to call it out. If you want an MBA in professional selling, listen to Andy's 953 podcast. There is some spectacular gold in there, and I continue to learn when I'm listening to those podcasts. They're really great.
Thank you. It's so much fun to do. I mean, as I tell people, I know people listening to the show are probably tired of me saying this, but yeah, it's been such a great learning experience for me to talk to all these smart people like yourself and all these others and just, I can't even begin to quantify how much I've learned from talking to folks. So yeah, I think, there's a reason almost everybody has a podcast these days. They're great learning experiences.
Yeah. Well, everybody seems to have a podcast these days, but I think I might have the number wrong, Andy, but I heard the majority of them tank out after about 8 or 9 episodes. I think that's on the high end.
Oh, I think it's more than a majority. I think the mean is 7 episodes.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah. I expect the median is probably quite a bit higher. It's lower. It takes work.
Takes work.
You do something on a regular basis as well. It takes work. It takes commitment and it takes curiosity, and you want to be able to jump into these conversations. So, yeah, I think people think, oh, it'd just be fun to get a mic and we'll talk. And sure, that's fun. But if you want to create something that other people want to listen to, then it takes, as I said, it takes that effort.
It sure does. You know, everyone's, you know, when we're chatting with some of these founders and CEOs that we work with, and they have this amazing passion for the importance of professional selling. You know, it's so critically important to them and their business. Mm. Oftentimes we'll catch each other, you know, it'll be 6:30, 7 o'clock at night at the end of a day together. And we'll say, we got to cut this off because we could talk for hours about this. So I can see how you've taken that, you know, when you have somebody where there's a meeting of minds, may not agree on every point in terms of their approach and your approach.
Absolutely.
But overall, you really agree with the importance of this as a business discipline. You know, you can really talk for hours, and you've talked for 950 something hours. So you proved that out.
I'm not sure it sounds good when you say it that way, but yeah.
Totally awesome. It's amazing.
All right, so let's jump into what we're going to talk about today, because I want to talk about sales process. Mm-hmm. And I was going through your website, your blog, and you write a great blog, and I urge people to check it out.
Thank you.
Your website. And just give your website real quickly.
www.inthefunnel.com.
Inthefunnel.com. Which is where you can see a recording of the webinar we did this week.
You sure can.
And so you'd written this piece that it sort of tracks and doesn't track with a lot of things I've been thinking about, sort of also thinking about in regard to the next book I'm going to write, after the one that's going to, new one's going to be published early next year, which is really going to be about process and sales process. And you write that, we need this repeatable sales process to convert prospects into paying clients. And, I don't think there's any basic argument with that. But where I really want to start the discussion is that if you, as I've done, is you Google sales process, B2B selling process, or B2B sales process, you get hundreds of thousands of returns. And, they're all pretty similar, right? They all tend to be these sort of what I call linear stage-based or linear step-based processes where one thing, sort of neatly ties into the other. And sort of the thing that they all have in common is that they don't really have anything to do with the buyer and their process. It's all sales-centric. So to me, this seems like, I believe, is one of the really big challenges for sellers, and perhaps one of the reasons why we keep having to coach people over and over again. As you said, business is booming. I mean, in our profession, there seems to be a shortage of challenges. But this seems to be a big one. Is that, how do we stop thinking about selling in terms of what we do as a seller and think about in the way what the buyer does as a buyer?
Well, those two things aren't mutually exclusive, in my view. So I absolutely agree. And, we do some other blogs on things like this common sense revolution in sales. But I absolutely believe everything's got to be about the prospect. So do we know who we're speaking to? Do we understand their world? Can we provide insight to them? Can we provide out value in every interaction? So the fact that we might be thinking along what we do as a process doesn't negate the fact that they've got the journey that they're going through. And it's not serial and it's not linear. And you've spoken multiple times about that, the Gardner spaghetti mm-hmm. diagram. And we've had Frank Cespedes on our show, from Harvard, where he talks about his version of the same. But when we're thinking, and you bring up this great point, hey, you Google it and there's 100,000 different options out there. But let me ask you this, Andy, when you're going in to train sales teams out there, 1 in 9 people in the US in sales, in Canada is 1.4 million of us. Are they following any form of sales process whatsoever? You know, do they know what they're doing? And when we're assessing the group we're coming to, we really get these very mature salespeople, people kind of in the middle, and then you get new salespeople.
Right.
And I think, you know, certainly, you know, it's very helpful for all three of those groups to kind of understand, at least from their perspective, are there some steps to complete a sale? So you think of these separate and distinct steps to complete a sale from their perspective that doesn't ignore what the client's doing, but it provides them with a little bit of a guide as to what should they actually be doing in each step. So it's not just the step of the process, but what are the sales activities in that step? And how do I actually know I'm progressing along?
Right.
And so how do I make sure I'm doing the right things, even if I've been doing this for a while? And so our experience is with some traditional industries, manufacturing, mature salespeople, sharp tip of the spear, these people, you know, mm-hmm. using some of your terminology, they know the clients, they know their products. They're unconsciously competent. The best of those people actually do follow a process. And the most important part of the process, basic solution sales process, is discovery. And they have a very good, clear way of going through that before they try and present, you know, financials or proposal or solution or any of those things. Now, that doesn't ignore the fact that their buyers are going through a process, and every step of the way they're trying to help their buyers with that as well. But they actually understand what they're trying to do. And when you think of things as a sales process, just the steps to complete a sale from our perspective within our world, from start to finish, that has to interact with the buyer's journey. It also has to interact with something like sales strategy.
Sure.
How do I actually, you know, progress along in a positive way to get to the end of a deal? So that's where we leverage it. And we're not big, Andy, on saying, you know, you have to be an automatron. You have to do, you know, Andy's got to do it the exact same way Mark does it, exact same way that Jacob does it. It's a guide, but it's also a bit of a checklist. There's certain things we should be doing along that path. And the reason a pilot uses a checklist or a doctor uses a checklist or so on and so forth, they kind of work. So that's where we like to think about it. And, you know, for us, what it helps us do with the teams that we train is we help them focus in on what we see as the most important part of that, which is discovery. We get right. Our training and leaders and everything is always asking us, how do you close better? How do you close better? Give me a closing technique.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we go, there isn't one.
Right.
Yeah, do a better discovery is your closing technique. But that's where we can talk about strategy. We could talk about the buyer's journey, but that's where we leverage process as a bit of a guide. And I think it's really important for new salespeople.
Yeah. And I'm not saying process is important. I think that it's why can't there be a common set of steps between buyer and seller? So it's not, because when we say, look, we're in discovery mode, or we're going to do a discovery call. The buyer didn't wake up that morning and think, oh, I've got an appointment with Mark today. We're going to do a discovery call. No, right? I mean, that's not in their lexicon. It's not in their thoughts about what they're doing. And you know, you laid out your five sort of steps that create demand, approach, discover, propose, close, which, to a point I made earlier about Googling, is, I mean, those basically, I think the words in step one are a little bit different, but that's the old IBM five call close that, you know, they were teaching back in the 70s.
Well, they took it from me, Andy, but we're not going to get into that. Okay, so we'll keep the lawyers out of this podcast for now.
Yeah, actually, I think the IBM one was prospect, discover, demo, propose, close.
Yeah.
So slightly different, but it's, yeah. But it's like, okay, well, but from buyer's perspective, I mean, those steps even make sense, right? So part of what I'm advocating is, why aren't we talking in the same language as the buyer? So when they say, look, and I think, and I'll get to how I'd advocate that be done, but when the buyer is looking at this job they have to do, they've got a series of steps. And, you know, Gartner diagram is certainly one of those. At heart, there were four jobs mm-hmm. they had to do. And I think, and Frank talks about them slightly differently in his book, but they're somewhat the same. He calls it explore, evaluate, engage, experience. Gartner was problem identification, solution exploration, requirements building, and vendor selection.
Right.
So if we just took those as a given and say, well, fine, why don't those are great steps. Why aren't those using Frank's explore, evaluate, engage, experience? That should be what the sales steps are. Why aren't they the same? There are activities we do in there, but I think this is still a barrier to sellers performing more effectively, is that they are on these parallel tracks that have moments of bumping into each other. But we should be looking through the same lens.
Yeah. By the way, I don't think the naming conventions aside, I think there actually is quite a bit of alignment. When you started...
Well, tell us why.
Because you talk about the first three steps of the Gartner buyer's journey. Problem identification, solution exploration, and then requirements building. Those are things that take place in a discovery, at least in our discovery. So, two of them. And so in the colloquial, one way is another, you get engaged with a buyer. Maybe they're, if you're lucky, they reach out to you and say, hey, we're considering a few things. And, you say, well, listen, the way we sort of take a look at it, figure out if we can help is, why don't we sit down together and open the kimono a little bit, have a discussion about where you're at today, where you're trying to get to, why. We've got a little bit of a guide for helping with that discussion. And then at the end of it, we can figure out if there's a way for us to help you. And if there isn't a way for us to help you, we'll tell you that. And if there is, we'll tell you that also. So outside of, that's where I mean a little bit, Andy, it's not always a super rigid, but when you get into the details, I know we like to map out five stages to make it simple. We like to put it on one page, but when we coach on it, there's about 15 different activities under discovery. It's not one activity, right? It's not one meeting, 30 minutes. There's a whole bunch of activities under there, but I think it actually ends up aligning pretty well with.
Let me just, if I could interject, but the way that most sales organizations practice it is discovery is this one and done activity. It's that's this stage. We've got exit criteria defined that, we've done that, right? Mm-hmm. We go and we ask our questions and we're on to the next stage. And it's like, it doesn't work that way. I mean, if you think that you discover everything you need to discover in one call with the buyer, you're going to be sadly mistaken. And you're wondering why you're not winning more of your deals. So that's why I think that in part of the reason why I think we're doing a disservice with sellers when we're stuck in these old naming conventions about what we're doing, because, that's a perfect example. And in my mind, discovery takes place on every interaction you do with the buyer. Interaction you're trying to deepen your connection. You're trying to deepen your credibility and trust. You're trying to deepen your discovery and understanding of the buyer. And deepen the value you provide to help them make a decision. And so, to me, that's not stage-based. This, you're doing sort of part of everything on every call.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I wanted to have this conversation is because I think it's really important for us, perhaps as a change, to say, well, look, we need to think differently about what we're really doing. That's something that really relates more to what needs to happen to help the buyer make their decision.
Yeah. By the way, I don't violently disagree with anything you've said so far. Now I'm sure that's going to come because you're a Liverpool supporter, so there's no way we're cut from the same cloth.
Who do you support?
Well, I'm going to say genetically, I was programmed to support Aston Villa.
Oh, well, I like Villa. But
so I was
generally not Liverpool.
That's a legacy thing. My dad was from Birmingham, so that was kind of a legacy.
Okay, got it.
One of the things I'll come back to again, Andy, which I think you bring this good point up, like when you're talking about, hey, it's not one and done, I'll agree with you. There's no question until a deal's done, anything can change. Right. And I've lived through very large transactions where we thought we were getting close to the end and then suddenly a new buyer's involved. Mm-hmm. In some cases, absolutely, they went and got professional negotiators to negotiate against us, mm-hmm, right? On massive deals, you know? So suddenly you think you're just finishing things off, and suddenly we're going back and starting things over again.
Well, that's the beauty of that Gartner diagram. Because to me, that was the first time I'd seen something that captured the reality of enterprise selling and enterprise buying.
I think one of the things, and you know, it's I think you bring up this good point that it isn't stop and serial and linear. I think what happens, certainly with our diagram, you know, and we could be maybe a little bit more clear. This discussion might help it a little bit. I think there is a lot of people though that have no process whatsoever. So
I agree.
Before I'm taking some, you know, trying to coach somebody become a 4 out of 5 and shooting a hockey puck, you know, I got to teach them what a stick and a puck is. And I mean, no disrespect for that, but there's some basics to help us get to think about this side of the thing. So have some system, and then you start to, based on what you sell and how you sell, then you start to evolve it. So I take the point that it may not be, you know, you're not through a gate and finished, done that gate forever for sure. The core intent of us trying to think about exit criteria on our end though is for the teams that we're coaching and training, you know, we want to help provide some clarity that really at the end of the day that says, I'm not having one quick conversation with Andy and then firing over some pricing and think I have a qualified, you know, deal on the table.
Or that I understand the buyer and their requirements and their
whatsoever.
Right.
Right. So I, you know, I think you, in your, one of your great books, you make this comment about being on a train overhearing somebody who had committed a deal and, you know, clearly had gone from approach call to proposal and you envisioned what the sales leader was saying on the other end of the phone. I thought was great. You know, so part of this is, hey, there are some steps to think about. Let's start where we should and try to earn the right to proceed to the next step rather than jumping to the end with a proposal.
Yeah. And I think that's such a critical point is, and you talk about in the blog as well, is this idea is that every interaction we have with a buyer is at sort of bottom line is that we have to earn the right in that interaction to a next interaction.
Right.
And yeah, there's always a sense you get from some sellers, and perhaps some a little less experienced, but those also are just sort of chugging through life and not paying attention, is that buyers don't have to talk to you. They talk to you once. They don't have to. I mean, more and more people sellers getting experienced, so buyers ghosting them and going silent, and they made a judgment that you just weren't worth any more of their time.
Right. We get that a lot, too. We do public workshops where it's not the consulting. People have just signed up and they come in and, hey, what happens? I've got this big deal and they've gone quiet for 2 weeks. What can I do now? And I say, well, let's jump in a time machine and let's go back to the first 3 interactions you had. So if you've got a time machine, we can fix this.
Yeah.
But it's pretty hard now. And so I agree with you, Andy. And I think, by the way, that adding value along every step is another one of these common sense principles about selling. You've mentioned it on many podcasts. I've mentioned it. How often are we getting, you know, folks with energy and enthusiasm doing demand generation, cold calling, prospecting us? They've never even been to our website.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, all
the time.
All the time. Or a first, I've actually had some interactions with senior people taking over partnership programs and so forth for companies. And, you know, they're reaching out because we might have partnerships with them or something of that nature. They don't even know what we do. They've never, you know.
Yeah, this is not relegated to SDRs, you know, newbies into sales.
It isn't.
Yeah, this is ongoing behavior. Yeah, I love one of my favorite interactions was, I don't think I told it in the webinar this week, but stop me if I did. But as I got this LinkedIn message from a guy who says, yeah, God, I'm looking on your profile. And I think you'd be a great candidate to start a podcast. And I most of the time don't respond. But this time it was just so egregiously bad. I responded. I said, In effect, I said, dude, if you had spent just, you're in sales, if you spent just 1 minute, not even a minute, and browsed my profile, you would have seen that not only do I have a podcast, I've had a podcast for 6 years and, yeah, a few hundred episodes. And he wrote back and said, I don't have time to do research before I reach out.
No, he didn't.
He did. Research is not part of our process. And this was not a junior guy. This was the person who owned the agency, the podcast.
Oh, my goodness. By the way, so therein lies the challenge. That actually comes up a lot in our training, because here's the reality. As you know, I feel like I'm talking to the choir of core, preaching to the choir, but it would have taken 2.5-3 minutes maximum for that individual to realize you run a podcast that was identified by Inc. magazine as one of the best leadership podcasts ever. Not sales leadership podcasts, podcasts. So it's one thing when we get, cold called by sales training companies, which literally I get cold called twice a month at least, mm-hmm. by a sales training company. Name brand sales training companies with bigger, much bigger names than we have.
Yeah.
And much, really. And I'm not going to mention them or anything, but some of them are franchised out and so forth, but we just get hit all the time.
Well, my favorite one recently I've been getting a lot is about hiring. And fill in the blank name, both from email and LinkedIn message. And it's, economy's booming. And I'm sure looking at your profile, I could see that Sales Enablement Podcast with Andy Paul must be hiring. It's like, it's a podcast, dude. I'm not hiring salespeople. Oh, yay. But that's all it does sort of feed into. I keep thinking is that, look, we have to the extent possible, this idea about using the same terminology, whether we're looking at it from the buyer perspective or the sales side perspective, mm-hmm. is just a way to help simplify, to help embed in people's minds more clearly exactly what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And in an effort to do that, then people can become more proficient at it, right? Because if they have the right vision in mind of what's really happening, what they need to do, my belief is, they could be more effective. And so I can't remember if I mentioned this on a webinar Tuesday, but I'm always constantly trying to define selling as simply as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's my simple definition of it. And then I'm going to sort of get into the sales process. Simple. So to me, selling is nothing more than listening to understand what's the most important thing to a buyer and then helping them get that.
Okay.
That's selling to me. And if you're in sales and you have that in mind, that you understand your job is to be able to listen, which means you got to ask questions, listen to understand what's the most important thing to the buyer. And that important thing could undoubtedly be more than one thing, but a combination of, solving a problem, achieving certain desired outcomes. But if you know that, then your job is to help them get it.
Right. Yeah.
And I think if people had sellers just understood that, just as a baseline, this is what you're trying to do. You're not trying to persuade somebody to buy something. You're trying to first understand what's most important to them. And then your job is to help them get that. That changes the whole mindset about, how do I go about this job then?
We position it, I don't disagree again, Andy, we position it slightly different. We're always trying to simplify it for everybody out there too. And we just say, our job is to help solve a problem for a client or help solve a problem for a prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And now, sometimes they may come to us knowing exactly what that problem is. And sometimes they may come to us looking for some guidance, looking in terms of what the art of the possible is. You've sold some very large things to some very large companies, done big deals. In your old world, you would have approached some very large prospects with a point of view on the art of possible that they may not have anticipated before.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it value engineering, big software companies call it different things, but they may not have known, you know, you might have done some research on their business and understand there were some metrics they weren't performing against, and you might be able to help them. But we think, hey, we're just trying to solve a problem for a client or a prospect, and pitching a product or pitching a service has nothing to do with that.
Well, you'd be surprised how much pushback I get when I post, and I did recently on LinkedIn, is that, you know, if you're looking at hiring, what I want is I'm looking for curious, open-minded problem solvers. Right. and people, that's for me, ideal seller, curious, open-minded problem solver. And you try something. People was, I mean, it wasn't a huge number, but I mean, there's a number of people just like, no, why problem solving? They're not problem solving. They're sellers. It's like, well, what do you think selling is?
Right.
We're not there to solve a buyer's problems. We're not. And it's just like, you know, one guy said, no, what you really want is you want somebody who's, you know, curious, da, da, da. And I just sort of wrote back, no, well, isn't that what the curiosity is about? Yeah, it just sort of went through it. It's like, oh, yeah, you're right. So,
well, you know, I always try and, you know, I don't want to sound grumpy about this. So I'm really optimistic and I'm really positive about all of this. And I think there's amazing upside because right now, in many cases, not all, by the way, there are some spectacular performers out there today. Mm-hmm. But I think the vast majority, there's this real opportunity to elevate sales performance. I actually also don't think it's that hard. So I think there's just this amazing opportunity, but part of it has to come from experience and expertise matters. So I may have had one role with one organization for 9 months where we were pitching product, and it was a great time for that technology, and it was a great time for the market, and the market was exploding, and pitching and being ineffective at selling actually was productive, and we got double-digit growth. But I think there's also something that comes from living with companies that have great value propositions to their market, trying to grow when the company did not have a spectacular product for the market. You know, mm-hmm. good economic times, bad economic times. What you end up defaulting to is a set of core best practices. And to be honest with you, they're just foundational. I wouldn't say they're all fundamental, but they're foundational. And to me, today in the environment out there, if I look at somebody starting their career, in the middle of their career, the end of the career, there's a massive gap. And I think these foundational things, like being able to communicate and ask great questions and, mm-hmm. you know, be intellectually curious and take an authentic interest in the other side of the table. So you really want to understand their environment. I got a mm-hmm. desire to improve my business acumen. I think that's missing on, you know, some of the newer people into professional sales because they're not getting that guidance from management.
Well, which means management's missing it as well.
They are.
Yeah.
Because.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, some in management are quick to point the fingers at individual contributors as being the source of problems. You know, every time I hear stories about, read things about, you know, sellers discounting and, you know, lowering the price. And it's like, well, that comes from managers. That doesn't come from the sellers.
Right.
The pointing fingers at sellers, it's like, well, no, they need help, right? They don't necessarily know what to do. And then we'd look at the frontline managers and think, well, it's kind of problematic there, but hey, they're not being trained and enabled. And, you know, we have these expectations. People just sort of know what to do. And it's, as I like to say, I think this is these foundational things you talk about for me are just sort of basic human skills. And I think they're just, you know, four that you need to have to succeed in sales is the ability to connect, curiosity, like four attributes I call them, yeah, connection, curiosity, understanding, and generosity.
Hmm.
And with those, the world's your oyster. But we assume people know these things, and they don't. So let's not shame them or blame them. Let's teach them.
You know, right.
I give this soccer example as this quote I saw several years ago from a soccer coach saying, yeah, when they bring somebody new, a younger person new onto the team, maybe come from a different team, a different league, whatever. He says, yeah, we spend a few months and we train them as a person first, and then we train them as a player.
Yeah. So, by the way, I love to, you just love to hear that, right?
Yep.
And then you think of that player who might have been so skilled and talented, when they come into an organization that starts to train them on being a better person and character and integrity and all those kinds of good mm-hmm. things, talk about the loyalty, you know, that coach drives for that individual.
Well,
so now,
yeah.
You know, now when the other team says, hey, we'll give you an extra nickel or a dollar, where in those cases, we'll get extra $5 million to come to another team, they really think about it. I'm not sure what the culture is over there. And so this is one of the other things when we're working with sales managers, Andy, we often ask this question because we get a little bit of that, of course, too. They say, well, the team. And we say, well, hang on, you own the team. Mm-hmm. You put them on a team. So what is it about these folks that's working and not working? And, you know, because obviously there's folks, you know, that cause some consternation. And we say, well, listen, what culture are you actually trying to drive? And what values are you expecting the people on the team to showcase? Mm-hmm. And where have we actually named it? So where have we got this document that says, hey, if you're working at, you know, 9:30 at night, like you were when we did the webinar, and you're tired and you're food deprived and you're trying to make decisions, what guides your behavior in terms of a value system when you don't have your wits about you? What kind of culture are we trying to create? And I think sometimes that's missing a little bit in these organizations as well. They just don't seem to have the time to think about these things.
But I think it gets back to what we were talking about before, these foundational elements is, you know, we still predominantly train sellers in behaviors that buyers don't like. You know, the very sort of pushy, stereotypical salesy, pushy, persuasive, you know, closer, quote unquote, closer mentality that's counterproductive. And people just have the wrong, like I said, this wrong mindset. That's why, you know, my simplified view of selling. I think if somebody had that as their basic mindset in terms of this is what my job is,
yeah,
then building on that becomes easier because they know, right? They have these milestones, these mileposts, whatever, that they use as guides. This is very simple. And I would say that my belief is that, yeah, most sellers look at sales as sort of a performance art. Right, they're you know putting on an act to some degree, because this is how they've been trained to act, and how they have been trained to act, yeah, doesn't really align with who they are as a human being.
Yeah, there's a veneer; it's inauthentic, or they need the veneer to do these things that they don't feel that comfortable doing.
Which is okay, maybe at first, but at some point, you either get by that or you don't stay in sales. I think.
Right, and so just back to your point. You know, if we simplified it, even use your definition, our definition, kind of same, solving a problem for a client. If we went into every discussion that way, where my goal is not to sell a deal mm-hmm. and to make a nickel, you know, my goal is actually to figure out if we can, you know, authentically help this client, you know, get to where they want to go. And if we can, fantastic. And if we can't, we're going to step away and let them know and maybe point them in the direction of somebody else who might be able to help because we can add value. That'll pay off for us in the future. Then a lot of the pressure we face and the nerves and the inauthenticity and all those things, the veneer, I think it can disappear. I actually think that's what a lot of more mature, you know, mid-career salespeople who have comfort in the value they bring to the table, mm-hmm. I think that's what they do. And you can call it different things. You could call it, a lot of the times, they're disqualifying customers. You know, when they're interacting, they're having a very positive conversation, but they're pretty focused on, hey, if we really can't help them, you know, they want to drive at night and we sell a car that doesn't have lights, then I'm going to point them in the direction of another. By the way, that's a reference to Andy's book also.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I'm getting, somebody else listening is going to go, what's wrong with that guy? No, that's a reference to...
Just supposing we did have a car with lights.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, again, that's what the desperation of, hey, I just want to have some qualified pipeline out there. But I think it actually raises the level of comfort with the profession. And, you know, you start to sell away...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, then we can start to to sell the way we would like to be sold to.
Yeah. I mean, right. And I think that part of the problem, and this gets to what you're talking about, you know, problem solving, but I think it also goes sort of a level below it. So I was giving a keynote speech to a well-known tech company, the sales kickoff, and I said, yeah, when you really look at it, what's your job as a salesperson? What's the one thing that everything else depends on? And, you know, everybody sort of looks at me like I'm sort of crazy, and you know, various answers from the audience, you know, our ability to persuade, da 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 da. And it's like, no, it's your ability to connect with another human being.
Mm.
If you can't do that, nothing's going to follow. And so I said, really, when you look at it, one perspective is your job is a connection professional. Because that's the rate determining step to sales oftentimes. And it's like, you could tell just looking in their eyes, yeah, they just weren't buying it. And I'm like, okay. You know, it's like, but that's it, right? We just have to have these simple things that give people the right perspective. And I'm sort of, I think one of the great sales books of all time, it's unintentional, is David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. I wrote about this in my second book.
You did.
Is, you know, when you look at a task in real life, he used the example of changing a light bulb. You know, we tend to think, well, I'll put that on my to-do list, you know, changing a light bulb. But in his book, I think it's like 8 or 10 steps to changing a light bulb that are all discrete to-dos, actually. And, you know, it involves identifying what type of bulb you need, you know, if you don't have it, identifying where you have those in. Do you have that on hand? If not, when are you going to go to the store? Yeah, and so on and so forth. And I give the examples that, you know, like a follow-up call. It's like 24 steps. But it's true in sales. You know, this first interactions you have with buyers, you know, that is so important. And sales, the bigger sales itself is, yeah, we think this is an unimportant step. My ability just to form a rapport with someone, a basic rapport, a basic connection. Everything's based on that.
Sure it is. By the way, I love that book, Getting Things Done. David was a guest on our webinar a month or two before you.
Oh.
Yeah, so great guy, great discussion. Yep. And love the way he goes at certain things. You know, from a sales perspective, I just love the fact it's so much easier if you just have that first step when you're creating this crazy hit list of things you need to do. And there's, you know, I like his realism too. You got 150 things to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier just to jot down, what's that next step? What's the next thing I'm going to do?
Yeah, as he said, what's the very next physical action you're going to take? And yeah. I think it's just such a great phrase. What's the very next physical action?
Yeah. You know, you keep coming back to these simple ways of trying to communicate that. And I think that leads to this challenge in sales training right now, Andy. So you know, as you've mentioned many a time, $20 billion gets spent roughly or so on sales training annually. As Frank has mentioned, you know, companies today spend 20% more training salespeople than anybody else. They actually spend about $1,500 a year U.S. training salespeople. Yet, through lots of indicators, it's not a perfect science, but sales performance continues to decline. And so you start to look at this and say, how do you simplify and actually, first of all, create a training program or curriculum that actually resonates and sticks? So after somebody goes to an event, 6 months later, there's some evidence that it's still in play in the company, because usually there's absolutely none.
Right.
Right. And then secondly, then how do we get the management team to continue to reinforce these things? Because right now, there's a lot of information out there on selling.
Mm-hmm.
I think people may have more information, but clearly they're not better informed.
Right.
So, you know, am I getting overburdened with these internet platitudes, like a 5-minute video that's supposed to teach me everything? Or am I reading, am I taking the time to read a book? Or am I investing myself to go to some sales training? So I think that kind of, I think it is on the training community to a certain extent, and then the leadership community, sales management community, it doesn't have to be our system or your system or, you know, pick a name, but have some system, you know, yeah. have a playbook.
Well, have your own system. That's fine. I think, yeah. See, to me, and this is something I've been writing a lot about recently and will continue to, is everybody sells differently, right? We're all sum total of the influences that came to us from books, training, managers, coaches, so on and so forth, mm-hmm. peers. So really it's incumbent upon us to really document and make sure we understand how we're doing it as individuals. What's our process?
Mm-hmm.
Individual process, because that's really what we have. I mean, yes, the company's got a process, but it's really our individual process. And this, I mean, in my experience, is, hey, the people are most consistently good at selling. Understand this. Excuse me. Understand this. Mm-hmm. And they can document how they sell. And they keep experimenting. And they're very intentional about it. And this is, I think, a goal for sellers and something that should be part of training and development of individuals is, you, I call it, write your own sales book. How do you sell? How I Sell by Andy Paul. List what you do and what works and what doesn't and what you're going to try to improve, and just sort of keep this journal, if you will, because I think this is where improvement comes from. And managers, the big challenge is we're in this era where because technology enables us to sort of, wrongly, I think, coach everybody to be one way based on a model they've heard is... Yeah, they need to encourage people to become the best version of themselves, but it starts with understanding why they do works or doesn't.
I absolutely like that, but I love that idea. I've never heard that before. Create your own sales book for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great, because once you document that, then once we've got a process or a methodology or an approach or best practices, then you start to look at where can I tweak it a little bit? What's working and what isn't? And
exactly.
You know, if you've, I play hockey, played soccer, didn't play golf as a kid. So when I tried to learn as an adult, you know, after once or twice out there on my own, realizing it was just terrible, because every time I try and hit the ball, I was taking a wrist shot.
Mm-hmm.
But then went to a teacher, a very good one. And the first thing they taught me was self-diagnosis. So tried to teach the basics of a swing, tried to teach this, but when the ball goes left or the ball goes right, here's what you've done. So here's how you just tweak it, get a little bit better. Keep it short and straight and just get better.
Right.
I think documenting, I love that idea of create your own sales playbook for you. And then you can go and identify, you know, where you need some help.
Yes, precisely.
And by the way, managers should try and create their sales management playbook.
Yeah, they should. I mean, it's sellers are, we've gone through this era through the introduction of technology into sales, and the way it's primarily been applied is to create conformity and enforce compliance. And I think the pendulum swing where managers need to understand they need to use the technology to give sellers more autonomy to become the best version of themselves, it's just going to take more work by the managers, but they have the tools to be able to help the individuals in the way they didn't before. And the way to mm-hmm. apply the tools is not to say, here's a call by Jennifer, who's the best salesperson, everybody be like Jennifer. It's to use the technology to help the individual listen to their calls and Jennifer's and say, how do we get better with you? Yeah. So, all right, Mark, unfortunately we're running out of time. But as always, this has been a pleasure.
Sure has. Thank you very much for having me, by the way.
Well, it's been my pleasure. You just had me on yours. Actually, that was all planned well far in advance. But we just happened to be here a few days apart. So again, if people wanted to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
That's through the website, Andy. So if you're a small and medium business today and you want some help building your playbook, we'd be happy to chat with you. And that you can get to us through the website at inthefunnel.com. But if you've already got comfort, you've got a playbook, and you'd like to train your team, either in a public workshop or a private custom workshop, And that's for sales leaders or salespeople. Same thing. You can reach out to us through inthefunnel.com. And Andy, I hope we do this again soon. This is always a pleasure talking to you. And I always learn something talking to you.
Well, likewise. That's been great. So, Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, Mark Cox, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, as always, thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.